This hour, we'll take your phone calls with Dan Kovalik. Cancel this book. We're talking about the cancel culture. What do you think? Share your views. And if you've been canceled, share your story as well. Welcome back. George Norrie with you. Daniel Kovalik with us. Daniel, tell us the significance of the Harper's Letter, Harper's Magazine.
Yeah, so last summer, about 150 very prestigious intellectuals, writers, authors, even musicians like Wynton Marsalis, signed a letter that was published in Harper's in which they raised the concern that free speech in this country was being cut back in many different ways, that people were being bullied into being silenced, and essentially made a call for free speech rights to be protected. In not only in the academy, but certainly there, but throughout society, and really raised concern about what this cancel culture is doing to free speech rights. In truth, the letter was pretty, innocuous in the sense that, you know, it was more or less a demand for the basic rights that we at least think we already have, the rights to freely speak our minds. And there was a huge backlash to this. There was a counter letter signed by a number of other academics and journalists who criticized those who signed on to the first letter as being privileged people who weren't sensitive to the issues of the day. And again, they denied the cancel culture really even existed. And the irony, though, is that at least 12 of the people who signed on to that counter letter that claimed the cancel culture didn't exist themselves signed on to that letter anonymously, saying they were fearful of reprisals from their employers. That is to say, they were afraid to be canceled, even though they were claiming cancel culture didn't exist. But again, the strange part was that you had this letter defending free speech rights, which should not have been controversial, right? But it was in the sentiment of the day. Calling for free speech is not seen as a progressive thing.
Interesting take of all of this. How did you get involved in this?
Well, as I said, I was inspired. I mean, I've been concerned about this for some time because, again, just saw these very bizarre cases of people being canceled, losing their jobs. And I felt compassion for those people. But the tipping point was the cancellation of this peace activist, Molly Rush, for the meme that I mentioned, you know, where she published a meme with a picture of Martin Luther King that said, never rioted, never looted, change the world. And she was deplatformed from the peace and justice group that she co-founded 50 years before. And this is, you know, she's a friend of mine. She's someone I've worked with for a long time. And very few people, I must say, came to her defense when all this was happening. Again, I think mostly because people were afraid they themselves would be canceled. And I just decided after that event that I couldn't be silent anymore, that even though I might be canceled myself for defending someone like Molly and others, it was my duty as a writer to defend her and others like her, and that's what led me to write the book.
Interesting take on all of that. Do you think cancel culture will kind of go away, waning, or is it going to get worse?
Well, I kind of think it's going to get worse before it gets better. That is to say, I do think at some point it's going to hit a peak where everyone's going to be fed up with it. You know, because, you know, the real, you know, issue, if you're paying attention, is that, look, you might be the next target, right? I mean, when you push for others to be canceled, you yourself, you know, have to understand at some point you're at risk of cancellation if you support that type of mob rule. So the hope I would have with that would be that, you know, people would understand that this was counterproductive and that things, you know, might, the temperature might be taken down a bit on this. But again, I think we're a ways away from that. I think it's going to get worse before we hit that point. I think, you know, we have a mood in society right now in which we're a very divided country, and in which, and frankly, that's okay. I mean, if we're divided politically, that's called a democracy. But the problem is that those who we disagree with tend to be vilified. You know, it's not just that we disagree with people, but we actually are considering those other people enemies, and that is of grave concern. And I think that is motivating some of this. I'll give you an example of this. So in the Atlantic magazine, which is a liberal publication, a journalist wrote an article after or around the 2020 election, presidential election. And he said that everyone who had voted for Trump, it was right after the election, everyone who had voted for Trump, that they, you know, were just like Trump in that they were mean-spirited, they were racist, selfish, and entitled people. And, you know, so this guy at a very reputable publication in that article felt free to write off 74 million or so people who had voted for Trump. Again, as racist and his other, you know, bad attributes, which he attributed to these people. Meanwhile, of course, I think of those 74 million, 18 million were people of color. So I don't think they were motivated by racism. And I don't think a lot of the other people who voted for Trump were motivated by racism or selfishness or entitlement. And in fact, a lot of them, you know, are from rural areas that are getting, you know, hit hard by economic woes and by the pandemic. But again, we're in this state where if we disagree with how people vote, we're not just content to disagree with them. We have to count them as the other. They're fascist or they're racist. And I think that that is very dangerous. Of course, the right does that too towards the left to some extent. And I think we need to find a way to come together and, again, disagree without being disagreeable.
Absolutely. Let's go to the phones, Dan. They're lining up for you. Cornelius in Alexandria, Louisiana, to get us started. Hello, Cornelius.
Hey, George, I want to tell you something real quick. Connie Willis and I talked. She's from Louisville. My dad's from a place called Lexington, Kentucky. And so she mentioned another word that you can call me is cornball, and she was comparing me to the show. She remembered Charlton Heston and Planet of the Apes, and there's a Cornelius in that too. So me and Connie Willis had a nice time.
Oh, that's good. I'm not going to call you cornball, though.
Well, Dan, I'm one of these few African-Americans that voted for Trump. I was telling Tommy that I used to be on Washington Journal. I used to call in on Washington Journal. Well, when I told them I was getting my news from Coast to Coast AM, they canceled both my phones. I can't call them on my cell phone and can't call them on my landline on nothing. So I've been canceled from Washington Journal because of Coast to Coast AM. And, George, I wanted to tell you one more thing. I said the N-word on your show, and you got to me and said, look, you can't do that. Don't do it no more. I never did understand till now because y'all are, you know, with the FCC and you can't say none of that stuff.
That's
That'll
right.
Get you in trouble.
That's right.
But I'm so glad you take these other guys. There's a guy you used to call in about hating Jews and stuff, and you just cut him off totally. So I'm so glad you don't let racists get on here.
Nope.
You know, and
there's no place for it. No place for it on this show.
Like I said, I've been canceled off of Washington Journal that comes on live every day and stuff with that call-in show they have from 6 a.m. to, I think, 9 a.m. But old George is super, and Tommy, I met them in New Orleans at the Oswald Conference, and, of course, that's where Wynton Marsalis was born. So
that's right. That's right.
But God bless you, and thank you so much, George, for not canceling me.
Of course not. Thanks, because you saw the light, to be sure. Go ahead, Dan.
Thanks, Cornelius. First of all, and I think I've talked to Cornelius before, on the show. Always enjoy talking to you.
Yep.
By the way, I'm a Kentucky boy myself. I was born in Louisville, Kentucky. Yeah, well, you see this here. Again, Cornelius does not fit the mold that people claim or people who voted for Trump. And yet, again, we cast these broad brushes on people like Cornelius. Meanwhile, again, he says that because he supports the show, gets his news from the show, that, you know, he was canceled from this other publication. And again, why should that be? Why can't others, again, be tolerant of other views and the fact that he listens to this program? But again, I see this all the time. I see, for example, people will often say to progressives, don't go on the Tucker Carlson show because he's a right-wing guy. Okay? Well, first of all, he's got 3 million listeners, so why wouldn't you go on his show? You know, I mean, if you want to reach people, why not go on his show? Just because you don't agree with him on stuff? The other thing, and I pointed out in the book, I mean, there's a view or a thought that seems very reasonable that Tucker Carlson might have played a very important role in convincing Trump not to go to war with Iran. And Tucker's been very anti-war in many cases, which, of course, I support. So the point is, look, you don't have to agree with everything that guy says. But that doesn't mean you wouldn't go on his show. And I think, again, there's too much of that, that we think we have to agree with someone 100% to go on their show or listen to their show. And to me, that just doesn't make any sense.
Next up, we go to Fausto in Toronto, Canada. Hello, Fausto. Hello. Going once. Going twice. There is no Fausto. Oh, well, let's go to Doug in Panorama City, California. Hello, Doug. Let's go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for having me on. I'm an artist, and I'm looking for solutions as opposed to just, you know, mentioning what happens, you know, all the time right now with political correctness and this cancel culture, so to speak. Every culture has something called a talking stick, and a conch shell in Hawaii, a peace pipe, all these different things for regulating their conversations. So I made a universal talking stick, no religious, occult, nationalistic, or cultural connotation. It's just an artwork. And I set up groups where you just hold it, and when you have the stick, you have the right to speak. And then 40 years ago, I read in Reader's Digest, the 10 rules of fighting or discussing something fairly. And one of the rules is there's timeout, no name calling, no raising your voice, always using I instead of saying you. And then one of the rules is when somebody else is waiting to speak, that they listen. And another rule is that they validate what the last speaker said, if they can find something to validate. And no, you know, violence, but always a timeout. I don't remember all 10 of them, but it really is amazing when people follow those 10 rules. And so I wrote a poem. It's very short, as a solution to what's going on today. Could I quote it?
Oh, sure, if it's short. Go ahead.
Okay. It's called The Power of Little Words. The right word at the right time can be the right tool to connect the you and I into the big equation of we. Those little words like love and hate can spark forest fires in our hearts and minds and ignite the forces that govern us. They can commit the slipshod crime of verbicide, or they can compress and expand our time together. They can cause us to liquefy, flux and flow together into the very stream of consciousness, or they can implode and obliterate us like antimatter. Better to choose our words carefully, especially the little ones with love, the ones that warm us, connect us, equate us, expand us and transcend our consciousnesses into one.
Well said, Doug. What do you think of that one, Daniel?
Well, I really like Doug. I like what he's saying. And the one thing that really resonates with me is this idea. I like the idea of this time out, because I think what you're saying, I think what this captures is the idea that before you pounce on somebody, you take a moment to think about what the implications of doing that are, right? And I think part of the problem with social media is things can be done so quickly and people don't take the time to say, hey, maybe I shouldn't be calling for this person to be fired. You know, I think that idea of taking a moment, taking a deep breath, and putting yourself in the place of that person who you're thinking about canceling, and maybe then, you know, pulling back and not doing that. I think that idea of timeout is very important. And again, I do think that social media, the problem with it is that things happen so fast there and people don't take a timeout.
What do you think of bullying?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think cancellation looks like bullying a lot. A lot of times it feels like bullying because, again, you do have this mob kind of mentality where people gang up on one person.
But I mean, canceling the bully itself.
Canceling the bully. Well, I mean, again, that's an interesting question. It depends on how the bullying, you know, what form it takes, certainly. But I do think, again, there are lines that are crossed where someone is harassing other people, threatening other people, and that really can't be tolerated.
Next up, we've got Joe, truck driving in Missouri. Hello, Joseph. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. A good discussion tonight. Very timely topic.
Indeed.
I was wondering if your guest could clarify. Earlier, he said that he thought that there are instances where cancellation is acceptable if it's overtly hateful or offensive, but there are taboos in society that are definitely outside the Overton window that someone could offer up facts sincerely. That are challenging historical narratives or crime and IQ stats, and they would still be very deeply offensive to many, many people in society, regardless of their truth. So I was wondering if you could just clarify when cancellation could be acceptable.
Okay, go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, well, it's a great question. I mean, I think, first of all, and I quote in my book, I quote a law professor I had at Columbia, John Powell, an African-American civil rights professor. And he argued, and I agree with him, that the fact that something is merely offensive really is not a cause to censor that speech. Because, as you say, people are offended by quite a many things, right? And when we all have our subjective ideas of what's offensive, not offensive. But where he draws the line is where the speech is not only offensive, but it prevents people from participating in a particular society or forum. That is, that it is so harmful that people become excluded from a particular venue. And that's where he thinks you have to draw the line. You can't allow that room for participation to be squelched by certain forms of again, more than offensive speech. And, I mean, the example you give, that someone is arguing facts or science in a rational way, but people are offended because they don't like the conclusions that are being drawn by that, I don't see where there'd be ever a case to cancel that person.
There shouldn't. Dan, we'll come back and take final phone calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Trisha Barker joins us as we talk about angels and near-death experiences, so make sure you're part of the program, of course. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dan Kovalik with us, his book, Cancel This Book, that's the name of it. And tell me how you came up with the title, Daniel.
Yeah, well, that's actually an homage, of course, to the book Steal This Book, which Abbie Hoffman put out, I think in the late 60s, early 70s, which I always got a kick out of. And I thought Cancel This Book sounded good. So I give Abbie Hoffman credit for that.
There you go. First time caller, Michael in New London, Connecticut. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Hi, George. You know, I think if Abbie Hoffman wrote this book, I think it would have been taken, the topic would have been taken a little more seriously. Here's the thing that I think everybody's missing. When you say cancel culture, okay, that's a euphemism for persecution, for censorship, and for repression. And we've seen it. I mean, it's not being put in historical perspective. We've seen it for millennia. We saw it during the Inquisition. That was cancel culture. We saw it in Maoist China, Stalinist Russia, Nazi Germany, the McCarthy trials. This is not a passing social fad like the Me Too movement. This is a historical juggernaut, okay? And it really needs to be taken seriously.
Well, and, you know, he's right there, Dan, but how many people do not take it seriously?
Well, I think a lot of people don't because, you know, with a lot of things, they don't understand that they might be the next one canceled, right? You know, if it's not at your doorstep many times, you don't pay attention. And I agree, you know, that this does have historical precedence. You mentioned some. I would say the witch hunts of you know, the Salem witch trials has a feel of that. McCarthyism in the 50s, you know, where you have these different times in American history where there's a mood to suppress certain thought and certain people, and it's always dangerous. And you know, those things end when people push back against them, and that's what I'm trying to do, and others are trying to do, to say, "Hey, wait a second, we don't want to go down this road."
Karen's with us in Indiana now. Well, welcome to the show. Hi, Karen.
Hi, thank you, George. I'm going to try to be as coherent as I can with my Lyme's insomniac brain here.
Okay.
But having listened for a while in queue here, some very good points have been brought up, and I do believe we have to work for solutions. And I want to touch on a couple of things. The last caller touched on some historical things. Go all the way back to Jesus. Didn't they try to cancel the good word of Jesus?
They did.
You know, and right on up to today, you can't even put anything on Craigslist, for heaven's sakes, and advocate peace and please respect the people using this venue as it's intended, and you get flagged before you even log out of the account. Cancel culture in our politics. Oh, yeah, we haven't even acknowledged who won the election yet. I mean, we know who we voted for. Right here locally, you got life and death environmental issues. You can't get anybody. You can't file a case. You can't get a lawyer. You can't get a senator or a representative or a governor to listen to you. And they're trying to cancel out. I'll just add this one in because it fits. They're trying to cancel out the male species in prison now that they're getting some COVID stimulus money to the inmates so they can buy more commissary items, which are overpriced. They're adding bras, panties, and lipsticks to the commissary of the men's prison. Is that not sad? We're trying to cancel out everything. And the thing about it is we have a set of rules, but we'd only apply them to one side. The bullies don't seem to have any rules.
Well, let's ask you this, Daniel. Does a private venue have the right to cancel anybody they want?
Well, I think to some extent, it depends on what private venue you're talking about. First of all, when it comes to social media, I have some concern that things, you know, companies that are so big and powerful like Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, that they wield so much power that they really, I think, should be regulated like public utilities, like, for example, your radio show is, right, by the FCC. And that would actually give a more robust First Amendment right to people if you did that. But generally, you know, smaller public or private venues can decide, you know, to exclude people as long as those exclusions are not based on race, religion, gender, that sort of thing, those sorts of discriminatory reasons. Since the Civil Rights Act of 1964, that is unlawful, even by private institutions.
Dave's with us in Tucson, Arizona. Hello, David. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm 63 years old. I've been watching this ever since I was in high school in the early 70s. It goes way back. I won a national award for best political cartoonist in all the high schools in the nation. And at the young age of 19, when I started to investigate and research what it was going to take to become a political cartoonist, I got canceled before I could get started.
Oh, geez. It's been going back for a long time, hasn't it, Dan?
When I was 19, I realized we don't have freedom of speech. The censorship has been rampant for a long time. I mean, a lot of this was imported from Germany after World War II. A lot of ideology came here and bled into our society from Germany. I'm reading a really good book right now called The Authoritarians, and it's just a bibliography on the history of how this influence has crept into our society over the past, you know, 70 years.
We just had Jonathan E. Mord on the show to talk about that book, by the way. So, Dan, it's been around for a long time.
Well, it has, you know, and, you know, the truth is that the U.S. has some of the best free speech protections in the Constitution, on the books, has some of the best protections in the world. But it is always necessary to fight to defend those protections, because when you're not vigilant, yes, you will see periods of repression and censorship. And we've mentioned a number of those periods. We always have to push back against suppressions of speech. And I think we are in a period where there is that suppression of speech. And again, those of us who want to defend free speech rights, we have to push back against that and have to defend the ability of people to speak freely and to speak their minds.
Lloyd is with us in Saskatchewan, Canada now on the international line. Hi, Lloyd.
Hello, George. How you doing?
Okay, sir. Hope you are too.
Yeah. I've been listening to the show. This is interesting. I know I was, we talked once before. I had a trap line way up northern Manitoba some years ago. I did it for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember hauling our furs into the auction sales. And we had animal rights groups there. And they threw, like, paint all over us, all over the furs. They we didn't have social media back then like you do today. But they made sure the word got out. Our employees were notified. We were pestered, harassed. Not so much myself, because I lived out in the cabin. And they probably couldn't find a way out there anyways. But they caused a lot of trouble for a lot of people. And trapping at that time in northern Canada was quite an industry. And they actually physically assaulted us as well.
What do you do about stuff like that, Daniel, when it gets to that kind of tension?
Well, I mean, again, there are laws on the books in the U.S. and Canada against
violence,
assaulting people physically, right? And that's a criminal matter, that should be taken seriously. Again, that is not speech. That's violence. And again, that's a police matter that needs to be dealt with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it is all over the place, too. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Next up, let us go to Linda Marie in Medford, Oregon. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, George.
Hey there.
Hi, Daniel. And I admire your courage in broaching the subject and writing this book. And yes, cancel culture is as old as Jesus, and we all get crucified just as he did. They used to call it killing the messenger. And I've been canceled by atheists, by, you know, besides my political views as well. So I'm just calling to thank you.
Well, I thank you for the call, and I thank you for your fortitude. And I think all of us are called to, stand up for what we believe in, despite the cost, despite the risks. And, you know, I appreciate you being one of those people.
Dan, are you seeing and feeling more tension, bitterness, hatred on different views?
Yes. I mean, I think we are seeing that for sure. I think we are seeing people's views now boiling over into not just mere expression, but into violence. I think the pandemic has made that worse. I think people are on edge. They're afraid of the disease, yes, but also concerned and confused about some of the rules, you know, that are put in place to deal with the disease. Again, it happened quickly. Most of us have never seen anything like this in our lifetime. And, of course, it makes us wonder, you know, what does the future hold for us? Again, not only in terms of our health, but in terms of our ability to survive and to make a living. And, you know, so not shockingly, you see a lot of tensions building up in this society. And it's quite concerning.
East of the Rockies, we've got Jeffrey now in Birmingham, Alabama. Jeffrey, thanks for calling.
Thank you, George. How you doing?
Good. Good, thanks.
I need to give you some titles here. I tried to give it to your screener, and he popped me off on hold. But this is Max Critical stuff, and everybody needs to listen to it. Okay, if you go on YouTube, there's first off is JFK, the speech that killed him. Okay, the second one is 1967 record exposes the Illuminati. The third is the secrets of the Khazarian Mafia, K-H-A-Zarian. And then the last, well, second to last, is Illuminati Wife Tells All, okay? And also, the history of gun control, all this on YouTube, and you can find out the meat of what's going on.
Well, what's interesting, Daniel, is YouTube hasn't bounced that stuff off yet.
Yeah, well, it is interesting what they keep on and what they, you know, throw off. And what I would say, you know, if people are interested in that, they should check it out. And, you know, you may want to save it somewhere because you never know, you know, what is going to be censored and what might not be there in the future.
Does your book have a conclusion or a recommendation?
It does. There is a conclusion. And the conclusion is, you know, I think pretty simple that, you know, those who are concerned about a better, building a better country, about social justice, you know, we need to go about it in a way, again, that's informed by compassion, by empathy, that tries to, you know, bring more people into the tent we're trying to build as opposed to trying to exclude people. And that's really what cancel culture is about, excluding people, many times based on small issues. In fact, there's a term I learned recently that I think it's a Freudian term called the narcissism of small differences, you know, where kind of tribal groups define themselves by pushing others out based on very small differences. And again, I think that is something that cancel culture reflects. And I don't think that that is conducive to building a democratic and pluralistic society.
No, probably not. We've got a minute left. Daniel, tell people where they can get your works.
Yeah, well, thank you. You can get my books, including Cancel This Book. You can order on Amazon. You can order it at Barnes & Noble, either online or going there. And if you want to support your local bookstore, which I always encourage people to do, buy it there. If they don't have it, they'll order it for you. To learn where all the outlets are that you can buy my book, go to my page on my publisher's website, skyhorsepublishing.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Daniel M. Kovalik, K-O-V-A-L-I-K.
And the book you wrote earlier, The Plot to Overthrow Venezuela, how was that received?
You know, very well. You know, it's not a blockbuster in terms of sales, but the people who have read it have gotten a lot out of it. It just was translated actually into Spanish, and I'm hoping to get it out into the Spanish community.
It's all about oil money, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's what it's all about.
All right, Daniel, thanks again for being on the program. You're welcome back anytime you want. Up next, we're going to be talking about near-death experiences, the angelic realm. So sit back and enjoy. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls and possibly some readings about near-death experiences in our last hour.